Chapter 10.
At least she's willing to talk first and shoot later,
Sorsha mumbled. She already shot one arrow, I pointed out as I tried to pick out the owner of the voice.
At the tree,
Sorsha remarked. You're assuming she aimed for the tree, I replied.
Who the hell are you?
The voice demanded again.
We're looking for a man named Charles Darwin, I yelled back. The clerk at the general store said we could find him here, but if that's not true, then we'll just head back into town, unless you know where he is.
After a long minute of silence, I heard someone move in the bushes. I lifted the snub nose, ready to fire should a target present itself.
What do you want with Charles Darwin?
The woman asked, and I could tell that she had edged closer to our position, though I still couldn't see her.
A friend of his named Evan sent us. He said Charles Darwin would have information that we could use.
Evan?
The woman asked in disbelief.
He lives on Brook Island. He runs a school of sorts there.
I heard rustling from a spot just to the right of the shack, and I peered around the edge of the tree. A woman emerged from the reeds and stopped in a weedy patch of dry ground. She was nearly as tall as I was, with sun-kissed skin and a long mane of black hair pulled back from her face in a loose ponytail and topped off with a floppy hat. She wore a long-sleeved shirt and baggy pants in the browns and greens of the surrounding woods, but I could still tell that she had a pair of very, very long legs.
Can we come out? I asked.
All right. Come out and tell me who you are. I won't shoot you.
I peered around the tree once again and noticed that she had lowered the bow, though she still had an arrow cocked against the string. I slipped the snub nose back into my pocket, then stepped slowly around the tree. I heard Sorsha follow me as I took a few steps into the clearing, and then we both stopped and stared at the woman. She was lovely, with huge brown eyes set in an oval face. Her nose was small and somewhat flat, and sat over a pair of plump pink lips. She watched us carefully, and just for a moment, I thought I saw her nose twitch.
How do you know Evan?
She asked after we'd all stared at each other for several heartbeats.
We were on Brook Island. We met some of the children who took us to meet Evan. One of the girls asked us to stay and help for a bit. When we left, Evan said we should find Charles Darwin in Motown.
And what is Charles Darwin supposed to do for you?
I'd rather share that with him.
We'd reached a stalemate, and we stared at each other for several more heartbeats.
If Evan sent you, you must be mages,
the woman finally declared.
We're not with the Magisterium,
Sorsha assured her.
Well, you wouldn't be if Evan sent you,
the woman mused.
But how do I know you didn't capture him and torture the information from him? Do you really think the Magisterium would just send a pair of mages all this way, in secret, to try to talk to your... what? Father? Uncle?
Sorsha pressed.
I have no idea what the Magisterium would do,
the young woman replied.
I just know he hates mages, and everything to do with them. Except Evan.
Because he and Evan were friends before the meteorite hit, I suggested.
I guess you do know Evan,
she conceded as she slowly released the tension on the bow and slipped the arrow back into the quiver on her back.
And he's my grandfather. I can't believe you think he's my father. He's like ancient.
Oh, no, we didn't mean to imply. I mean, you're clearly young enough to be his granddaughter, and you're really beautiful.
I saw a hint of pink on the woman's cheeks for a moment, and then she looked down at the bow for a moment.
Kind words won't get you on his good side if you really are mages,
the woman declared when she looked at us again. So he really does live here? I asked, as I glanced at the dilapidated shack one more time.
Not in that,
the woman replied as she waved at the crumbling structure.
Evan said he and his family had moved into a place underground when the meteorite first struck,
Sorsha blurted out.
Charles stayed on even after his wife and children moved back to the surface.
That's Gramps for you,
the young woman said with a nod. So what's your name? I asked. She considered us for a moment, then glanced at the arrow in the hickory tree. She walked past us and pulled the arrow from the trunk, then added it to the quiver as well. After all that, she gave a shrug and turned to face us again.
Well, Gramps says it isn't safe to share my name with strangers, but I sort of hate that rule. Besides, you're here on old man business, so... you must be all right.
sure, I agreed.
I'm Freya,
she finally declared. I'm Hex, and this is Sorsha.
Wow, not a normal name among us,
Freya chortled.
Sorsha's common in the old country,
Sorsha sniffed.
Not that common, I'd wager,
Freya replied, though she did so with a smile.
Maybe not as common as some,
Sorsha admitted. So, where is your grandfather? We were hoping to meet with him today and then leave quickly.
He's fishing,
Freya said with a shrug.
But he should be back soon. I can show you the house if you'd like to wait.
If you're sure it's all right, I replied, though what I really wanted to know was whether he would, in fact, be back any time soon.
He won't be any happier if I just leave you sitting out here,
Freya remarked.
So you might as well have something to drink and have some fun poking around in all his collections.
Freya turned and stalked off with that statement, and Sorsha and I quickly fell into step behind her. We walked past a crumbling wooden fence covered in blackberry and raspberry vines, and down an old deer trail to a clearing. At first glance, it looked like an empty space among the trees, but beneath the pine needles and brown leaves was a flat piece of concrete, about 10 feet by 10 feet, with a pair of flat metal panels in the center. Freya leaned down and slipped a hand beneath a cleverly concealed lever, and one of the panels slowly swung open. The dark-haired woman smirked when she caught our surprised looks, and then stepped into the hole that had appeared. Sorsha and I stepped forward and peered into the opening. Metal stairs led down toward a concrete floor where Freya stopped and waited for us. There was a lamp at the bottom that made a strange buzzing noise, and strangely the scent of pine and gardenia. I could see more lamplight behind Freya, but that was it. Great place to take someone if you wanted to kill them in secret, I noted quietly.
You can stay outside if you want,
Freya offered.
But Gramps will probably shoot to kill first. I guess we're going down,
Sorsha replied as she started down the steps. I took one last look at the pleasant little spot far from the town, then started down the stairs. The steps seemed too light to hold our weight, but they remained firm beneath our feet despite the clattering noise our boots made as we stepped down. When we reached the bottom, Freya gave us another smile, then pressed a small button near the lamp. The door above us slowly swung closed, though the clang I expected when the metal clamped shut never happened. There was just a brief squeak, and then the sunlight was gone. Freya hung her bow and quiver on a hook, then started down the hall.
We've got cold water and some of Gramps' special vegetable drink,
Freya announced as she led us deeper into her home.
Use the last of the milk this morning, or I'd offer you a glass.
Water would be fine,
Sorsha noted. We were in a narrow hallway with rooms on either side. The only light was from another pair of buzzing lamps on hooks, so it was hard to see what was inside the rooms, but I could pick out the shapes of large boxes stacked neatly around the walls, and smaller boxes on shelves near the back. My palm started to itch as I glanced in one of the rooms, and I realized that Darwin's gun stash must be nearby.
So, grab a seat,
Freya declared, and I realized that she and Sorsha had walked on ahead. I had stopped outside the room where I was certain the guns were, and I was tempted to slip inside and find them for myself. I glanced down the hallway, but I could still see Sorsha and Freya, and they both turned to give me a quizzical look. I glanced at the storage room again, then joined the women in the main room. The main room was large enough to hold a stove, an oven, cabinets, a table and chairs, and a sink on one side, and a large sofa, a pair of overstuffed chairs, and a collection of books on the other side. There was another hallway on the far side of the room, and I could pick out two more doors along that hall, though there may have been more that I couldn't see from my angle. The room we were in was well lit, though total darkness lurked around the edges. Despite the welcoming scents and the obvious signs of a home, there was something tomb-like about the place and a dampness in the air that the heat from the stove couldn't quite eliminate. Freya pointed to the round table, and Sorsha and I both sat down. Freya opened a cabinet and pulled out three glasses, then opened a small metal box next to the sink. She pulled out a pitcher of water and filled each glass, then returned the pitcher to the box. She carried the three glasses to the table and set them down before taking a seat herself.
So, Charles Darwin is your grandfather?
Sorsha asked after she had gulped down some of the water.
Yep,
Freya replied.
Actually, he built most of this place.
Wow, I commented as I peered around the space. I didn't know people in the pre-magic world sometimes lived underground. Freya considered that for a moment while she sipped her water, then shrugged.
There used to be a nice house on the land, but Gramps was always the cautious type, I suppose. He built this thing in case they were ever attacked or some big natural disaster destroyed everything else. Sadly, he turned out to be right. At least as far as the natural disaster part goes. He and Grandma and their sons all moved here the day the meteorite struck.
Evan mentioned that, I said.
They were here for ages, or at least that's what my dad always claims. Grandma says it wasn't that long, but once it was clear that there were still a lot of people in the world, and that they needed everyone to chip in and find a way to save humanity, well, she decided she needed to do her part. She left, and the boys all went with her. Dad admits that he and his brothers were probably all bored with living in the shelter rather than feeling altruistic, but it got them all out of this place.
Is it just you and your grandfather here now?
Sorsha asked.
It is.
Freya admitted.
Sometimes Mom and Dad or one of my uncles comes by, and my cousins like to visit every once in a while, but we're the only ones who live here all the time.
Why are you here? It doesn't seem like a very exciting life for someone like you. Freya cocked her head to one side and watched me for a moment. Her nose twitched again, and I thought she might sneeze, but she finally shrugged and stood up. She finished her glass of water in one long swig, then took it to the sink.
I like it here,
she finally said as she returned to the table.
I don't enjoy loud parties hosted by airheaded boys and girls, and I don't like spending hours on end sitting in the parlor doing needlepoint. Does anyone?
Sorsha laughed awkwardly when the silence dragged on. Freya looked down the hallway to the stairs then and stood up slowly. I saw her draw a deep breath as if to steady herself, and then she moved past us and went to stand in the door to the main room. I realized she had effectively blocked us from the view of anyone walking down the hallway and exchanged a worried glance with Sorsha. The sound of heavy boots clattering down the steps filled the air, and then I heard the slight squeak of the door as it closed. The clean, slightly sweet scent of fresh fish wafted down the hallway and mingled with the pine.
I thought you'd be outside, a gravelly man's voice declared. And you forgot to oil that hinge.
I'll take care of it,
Freya sighed.
But I have something more important to tell you.
What's that?
The voice asked in a friendly tone as it drew closer.
Did we get a letter today?
Not a letter, no,
she replied. By now, the man with the gravelly voice had reached the door jamb, and I could just see him around Freya's lithe frame. She still tried to position herself so he couldn't see us, but he knew his granddaughter well enough to know she was trying to hide something. He gently turned her aside and looked into the room. Charles Darwin was in his 70s, to judge by the wrinkles on his face, but he was still fitter than many men I knew. He looked like he could still unload bales, chop a month's supply of wood, then sit in the saddle for the rest of the day. Like his granddaughter, he was tanned from the sun, except for the area around his eyes, which made him look like a reverse raccoon. His hair was gray and barely more than stubble on his head, and his ears stuck out from the side of his head like a couple of saucers.
"Who the hell are you?" Darwin demanded.
"Evan sent them,"
Freya explained before Sorsha or I could respond. Darwin pondered that for a moment, then finally stepped into the kitchen area. He handed a gutted fish to Freya as he did so, and she accepted the fish with both hands. Darwin stopped next to the table and stared at us while his granddaughter salted the fish, wrapped it in wax paper, and placed it in the metal box.
"How is Evan?"
Darwin finally asked, though his tone was less than friendly.
"He's alive,"
Sorsha said after a moment.
"The school is doing well."
"Are you two some of his graduates?"
Darwin demanded. We both shook our heads.
"We only just met him,"
Sorsha added when Darwin didn't ask anything else.
"He helped us find our way across Brook Island."
"And he sent you here to do what? Because I know he didn't send you all the way out here just to say hello."
"He said you had information we could use," I replied.
"Information about what?" Darwin pressed.
I hesitated as I glanced at Sorsha and then Freya, who stood just behind her grandfather with a look of interest on her face.
"Don't worry about the girl. She'll hear it all anyway."
"Gramps,"
Freya protested, but a quick look from him silenced whatever else she had been about to say.
"So what's so important that Evan sent you all the way to Morristown to find me?" Darwin asked angrily.
"He said you had guns," I admitted. "He said you could show us your guns and provide us with information about how to, I don't know, be safe around them."
"Guns?" Darwin repeated in disbelief. "First off, what do you need guns for? And secondly, if I did have guns, and that's a mighty big if, why the hell would I share them with some complete strangers?"
"We don't need to take the guns," I tried to explain. "Can I show you something?" Darwin glared at me and crossed his arms in front of his chest. He lifted his chin, studied me for a moment, and then finally nodded his consent. I put my hand in my pocket and slowly withdrew the snub nose. I heard Freya gasp and saw Darwin start to reach for his own waistband, so I quickly laid the gun carefully on the table and pushed it toward the older man.
"You're bringing a shitload of trouble down on us with that thing," Darwin snapped. "Where the hell did you find it?"
"I made it," I replied.
"You did what?"
Darwin said as he finally picked up the snub nose and started to examine it.
"You did not make this. It's got the manufacturer's stamp. This is a Smith & Wesson Model 360.
"It's my magic," I explained. "Once I hold a gun, I can recreate it down to the last detail."
"So you've held a snub nose?"
Darwin retorted. "And a Colt revolver and a Ruger 22 rifle that Evan said you gave him," I added. "Oh, and I have a Mossberg Maverick."
"So let's see you create one of those other guns,"
Darwin snorted. "I can't. Not yet. I have to wait 24 hours after I fire the last bullet before I can make it again."
"So you fired a Colt revolver and a Ruger and a Maverick in less than 24 hours?
Darwin asked in disbelief and then added,
"That was you this morning. I thought I heard a gun, but nobody around here has one, so I figured it was something those idiot mages were up to."
"We were being chased by some mutants in the wasteland. We made it here through a portal, but two of the mutants followed us."
"Gramps,"
Freya said quietly.
"Don't you want to at least hear his story?"
"No,"
Darwin snapped as he set the gun back on the table.
"We don't need whatever trouble is following these two. If you're in touch with Evan, you can tell him I'm glad he's doing okay, and to let me know if he needs anything, but I won't help you."
"Gramps,"
Freya tried again.
"No more, Freya. Now, see them out before I change my mind and shoot them. You never should have brought them down here in the first place."
Freya started to protest, but the hard, angry look in her grandfather's eyes quickly quelled her complaint. She motioned Sorsha and I to follow her, and we both stood up quickly. I picked up the snub nose and slid it back into my pocket, all under the watchful gaze of Charles Darwin. Once the gun was safely back in my pocket, I made a point of keeping my hands in front where Darwin could see them. I had to squeeze by him to follow Freya, and for a moment we were chest to chest and eye to eye. He radiated anger, but beneath that I thought I saw fear in his eyes, and I wondered what type of encounters he'd had with mages in the past. I heard the hinge squeak and Freya's softer tread as she climbed the steps, followed by Sorsha's boots. I tilted my head just a bit, not so much as a nod, as an acknowledgement of the man in front of me, then walked as calmly as I could to the steps, with Darwin's eyes boring into my back the whole way. Stepping back into the bright day was both startling and momentarily blinding, and I had to stop on the edge of the concrete pad and blink several times until my eyes adjusted.
"That was interesting,"
Sorsha murmured.
"So now what?"
"So now we head back to town. Maybe visit the coachman's inn."
"I'm sorry about that,"
Freya huffed as she started along the trail.
"I really thought he'd at least listen to your story since Evan sent you. He and Evan have been friends forever, like back in the pre-magic days, and Evan was the one who convinced Gramps to rejoin the rest of the world. I've never known him not to do something Evan wanted." "But Evan isn't here,"
Sorsha pointed out.
"And he doesn't really have any reason to believe anything we've said."
"Is it true?"
Freya asked as she stopped and turned to face us.
"Can you really create a gun after you've held it?"
"I can, but you can't tell anybody."
"No problems there,"
Freya snorted as she started forward again.
"I'll just add it to the load of other secrets we keep around here."
When we were back at the ramshackle house and the slow-moving waters of the bog, Freya pointed us toward the rutted track we'd followed on the way in.
Can you find your way back?
She asked. If we don't meet any dangerous animals or mages along the way, I think we'll be okay, I jested.
There's nothing like that around here. Medric the Marvelous Mage makes sure of that.
You don't sound like a fan of Medric, I noted.
So not a fan. He's a real prick. But I will admit that he does keep things safe.
Freya!
Darwin's voice rang out.
Guess I gotta go. Gotta get that hinge oiled. Nice meeting you, and good luck.
She gave us a quick wave, then sauntered back toward the rickety fence and the trail beyond that. Since neither Sorsha nor I felt like facing Darwin again just yet, we started down the rutted road without a backward look. Lewistown Road was busier when we passed along it on the return to town, though it was mostly young children who ran between the yards of the different homes, as if it was all just one big playground. A few of the kids stopped to watch us pass by, and two of them even waved. But whatever game they were playing soon had their attention again, and they went on about their business as if we had never been there. A young woman with an infant in her arms and an elderly man who sat in a rocking chair on a porch both eyed us suspiciously, but when we continued on toward Main Street without stopping anywhere, they turned their eyes back to the children. "He does have guns," I sighed as we stepped out onto Main Street. There was no one else around at the moment, and I didn't think we'd have much chance to talk about guns once we were back in the town proper.
"You're sure?"
my companion asked. I could feel them. I had felt the Maverick in the house, too, but I was so focused on trying to hold off the mutants that I blocked it out.
Maybe we could come up with some way to convince him to help?
I don't know. He wasn't just angry. He's afraid as well.
I felt that too. It's something to do with the granddaughter, but I'm not sure what.
It does seem odd that she lives out there with him. And I don't care what she says. I can't imagine she likes being isolated like that all the time. Could she be a mage?
I didn't sense any magic in her.
Well, it doesn't matter anyway. He'll shoot us both if we go back out there, unless we can give him a good reason to at least show us the guns.
And if we can't convince him? It seems like a lot of effort to get here just to be turned away.
Realistically, how long can we stay? The Wastelands gave us some breathing room, but I'm sure they've guessed we're heading west. They'll be back on our trail soon enough. As much as I'd like to see this stash of his, I think we should just go ahead and make plans to leave tomorrow.
I guess you're right. But at least we'll be able to enjoy some of that fine dining at the Coachman's Inn, and maybe a night on sheets that aren't about to fall apart.
We should look at some horses, just to see what's available. We can cut some time off our trip if we can find some good animals.
I like the sound of that,
Sorsha agreed. We chatted idly as we got closer to the town and more people started to appear on the road. Coaches and wagons rumbled past as well, and even a group of farmhands on horses trotted by. Motown was a happy, successful town, and though I had no love for mages at the moment, I had to admit that Medric seemed to be doing a good job. We made our way to the Coachman's Inn first, where we were happy to discover that there were rooms available and that lunch service would begin shortly. We reserved separate rooms, since the clerk looked offended at the very idea that an unmarried man and woman would consider sharing a room in such a fine establishment, and then booked a table for lunch. With our paltry collection of goods deposited in our rooms, and time yet before lunch, we asked the clerk about horses. He pointed us toward a yard on the opposite side of the town from the police department, near the older church. We thanked him and set off down Main Street once again, though at a more leisurely pace. As we strolled along and peered in windows, I heard more than one person remark on the short, ugly mage that had caused such a ruckus that morning. I grinned at Sorsha when I heard that story repeated for about the 10th time, and we walked past the church in a very good mood. The second church looked even older than its partner at the other end of Main Street. It was shorter and squatter, with walls made of stone. There was a square tower near the center of the building that looked like something you'd find on a fairy tale castle, with an arched opening on each side of the tower near the top. Most of the windows along the front and sides were little better than slits, although we spotted a larger, more colorful window on the back of the church. It looked like another image of the man with his arms held wide, along with a few other people, but the sun wasn't at the right angle for us to get a good view. In any case, I wasn't paying attention to the sights anymore. I was convinced that someone had followed us since we had stepped out of the coachman's inn, though I had yet to spot our tracker. Whoever it was, they knew enough not to let their reflection be seen whenever we stopped in front of a store window. "I think we're being followed," I finally whispered to Sorsha as we paused to study the back of the church.
"Oh, good. I thought maybe I was just being paranoid because I haven't been able to spot whoever it is."
"Neither have I, but I can't shake the feeling that we're being watched."
"Should we go back to the inn?"
"Let's go ahead and take a look at the horses. Maybe we'll be able to figure it out. If not, we'll go back to the inn and decide if we should sneak out the back and leave now."
"He's not a mage,"
Sorsha tried to reassure me. "Could still be trouble," I replied. We started to walk again and found the local horse dealer easily enough. He had a large operation with stables for rent, as well as horses for sale. We strolled past an intense negotiation for a red colt and draped ourselves on the corral posts to watch the handful of horses that munched on the hay. There was an impressive draft horse which was worthy of everyone's admiration, but not what we needed for a hard ride across the country.
"I like the gray."
"She'd probably be a steady ride," I agreed as I looked over the mare. She was well built, with strong legs, a wide chest, and ears that pricked at every sound. Her gait looked smooth as she trotted toward the water, and she watched the people around the stables with interest.
"She'll cost a lot."
"We still have plenty of Scott's money left," I snickered. We watched for a few more minutes, but our tail never appeared. We spent a few minutes with the owner and promised to return to discuss the cost of the gray mare and a bay gelding that also looked promising.
"Let's go this way and see if we can spot our watcher,"
Sorsha suggested as we took another slow walk past the corrals. This way was a small road that ran along the back of the stables. There was a sign for a healer and an estate lawyer further along, but that was it. The road appeared to meander off into a nearby field where I would guess the horse dealer could take his charges for some exercise. "Good idea," I said as we turned into the lane. We ambled past the healer and the lawyer and enjoyed a slow walk under the shade of the oak trees that lined the road. When we were past the last building, a run-down affair with a stack of empty casks out front, we stopped to look at the field. I heard movement off to our right and started to pull the snub nose from my pocket.
"It's just me,"
Freya said as she stepped out from the shadows. "Why are you following us?" I demanded.
"Because I think we can help each other,"
she replied.
"What do you mean?"
Sorsha asked.
"Look, you want my grandfather's help, and I think I can talk him around showing you the guns and telling you about them and, well, just whatever else you want to know,"
Freya blurted out breathlessly. "Okay. Well, what do you want in return?"
"I want to go with you when you leave here."
"You don't even know where we're going."
"You're going west, I'll bet. Are you going west?"
"And what if we are? West could be anywhere."
"But it won't be here, near my family." "So you just want to run away from home?"
Sorsha asked.
"No, that's not it,"
Freya huffed.
"Not exactly. Look, do you want my help or not?"
"We're making a long and dangerous trip. There are no guarantees we'll get where we want to go, not with the Magisterium on our tails. We could very well end up dead before we even reach the halfway point. Joining us could be the same as joining a suicide mission." I wasn't trying to be mean, but I wasn't exaggerating either. And the last thing we needed on this journey was a bored 20-something who wanted to get away from her family for a few days or months. And though the dark-haired archer had some good skills with a bow, I had no idea how she would react in a do-or-die situation with red-robed mages.
"I can fight,"
Freya insisted.
"And I can track. I can do lots of things. I even know how to shoot a gun." "Freya,"
Sorsha started to protest.
"I'll talk to Gramps tonight,"
she cut in.
"If you want to make the deal, come out to the house again tomorrow morning. Gramps will show you the guns, and when you leave, I'll leave with you. Take it or leave it."
"If you change your mind, we won't turn around and bring you home," I warned in one last bid to warn her off.
"I won't change my mind,"
she affirmed. She stalked away then, along the road, past the lawyer and the healer. We watched her until the archer reached the stables and slipped inside one of the barns.
"What do you think?"
Sorsha asked. "I think I want to see Darwin's guns, which means we may have someone else joining us on this journey. I can't imagine she'll stay for more than a day or two, though.
I wouldn't count on that,
Sorsha murmured.